Welcome to Net Front Presence, the playoff push edition. I'm Jeff Gordon, the Post-Dispatch, joined by our beat reporter, Matthew DeFranks. And man, our heroes are in the chase with a big push after the Four Nations tournament. And it's getting interesting between the Blues and the Vancouver Canucks, the Calgary Flames, and Utah Hockey Club. This is going to be interesting.
Yeah, as we wake up on this Thursday morning, Calgary has the second wildcard spot. They have 71 points in 64 games. Vancouver, 71 points in 65 games. And then St. Louis and Utah, both 2 points back of Calgary with one more game played. So they got four teams all on the hunt, relatively close to each other. You know, if Calgary does win that game in hand that they have on Vancouver, St. Louis, and Utah, then they open up a 4-point advantage, and it looks a little bit bigger. But you know, if they've only been playing, you know, a little over 500 hockey for the entire season, right? So if they lose that game, and suddenly we're looking at a lot tighter race for this last spot in the Western Conference. So it's a lot closer than I think we would have imagined. And even you look at this 4-day break that the Blues have had, this is when you would kind of expect them to maybe fall back in the standings a little bit when they're not playing games, they're not accumulating points. And that really hasn't happened. They've gone from, 1 point out to 2 points out. So maybe they've fallen back a little bit. But the games played have kind of evened up a little bit. You know, Vancouver is now on the same level as the Blues. And Calgary, at one point, they had played three fewer games than the Blues, and now they only have one game in hand. So the games played are getting a little closer, and the Blues are still in the race.
Yeah, and let's just talk a little bit about those teams before we get to the Blues. The interesting team in the bunch, of course, is Vancouver, because the Canucks just been trending the wrong way for so many reasons, so many injuries. You know, the Pettersson-Miller hoo-ha, with Miller eventually, JT Miller leaving, and Pettersson continuing to slump, although he snapped out of it a bit last night. Quinn Hughes being hurt multiple times. He's the most valuable player on that team, their captain, a dynamic to puck-rushing defenseman. Of course, Thatcher Demko's been an injury issue all year. So it's been one thing after another for Rick Tocchet's team, and that's a team that's really how the door got thrown open, so that a number of teams could at least think about getting in the playoffs.
Yeah, I think when I look at Vancouver, on paper, I think that they're the best team of that group, right? If you think about it this way, their best player, as you mentioned, Quinn Hughes, has been injured for most of the year, or playing through an injury for a lot of the year. They're depending on whether you want to classify Miller or Pettersson as their second and third best players, but one of them is no longer with the team. The other one of them is having the worst year of his career, and they're still 2 points out of a tied for a playoff spot right now. So their goalie has been hurt. Like, they have so many things that haven't gone well for them, and they're still in the position that they're in. They seem to me as the best team of that group. And if they can get a healthy Hughes, if they can get, you know, Demko playing the way that he has in the past, like, they're a good team. This is a team that won the division last year, I want to say, right? Because I think that's right. So, like, they're a good team, and they just haven't had the right things go their way this year. And you know, a lot of that is, you know, themselves to blame. But some of it, you wonder, where can that team show up again in these last, you know, 18, 19, 17, whatever games there is for that team. So I think that they're the best of the group right now, but hasn't shown that way all year, as we've seen.
Yeah, and of that group, I mean, Utah is clearly a team on the rise. I think they were the hope there for Bill Armstrong and his crew that the team would rise a little more dramatically than it has. But nonetheless, that is a team that is on the rise and has a bright future after switching from the Valley of the Sun and the tiny arena to the dynamic new market that they have in Salt Lake City. Exciting things to come, but they still really haven't gained full traction. And then you have Calgary, a team that's not unlike the Blues in a sense. They've got some big contracts, and so there's really, the tank and rebuild thing wasn't really an option with Cadre, with Huberdeau, with getting Mackenzie Weegar on the goal, I mean, or on the blue line rather. That's a team that's kind of in a retooling on the fly whilst trying to stay in the chase like the Blues. And so, neither of those teams are too exciting, Utah or Calgary, but neither of them are terrible either. So it's really, I think it comes down to, can the Blues keep winning at this rate, and will Vancouver realize its potential?
Yeah, and I think with Calgary, I guess I'd always looked at them as a team that was like a year behind St. Louis, right? Because I think back to that trade deadline for the Blues in 2023, where they had all those UFAs, had Tarasenko, Mikkola, O'Reilly, Achary, Barbashev. They all were up at the same time. They all sold at the same time. Like they were able to kind of reset, get those assets, and the Flames kind of went through that last year when they had, Hanifin and Lindholm, and like they had the pieces that they were able to sell at the right time when they were taking a little dip. And so to see them in the position that they're in, like they had the goalie that's played really well for them, just like the Blues had their goalies play really well for them last year. So they remind me of the Blues team from a year ago in the fact that they're in the playoff chase, they're right there, but you don't quite know what they are, and then like Utah, I was a little bit surprised that they didn't do more at the deadline. In talking to people, they could see that Utah really wants to make the playoffs. This being the first year in the market. Obviously the changes that they made in the offseason, Sergachev was a big deal. And the fact that they're in the hunt, I know they signed all those guys to extensions. They had a bunch of deals done around the trade deadline, but they didn't really go out and get someone on the open market. So that surprised me a little bit, just given their desire to make a splash in their first year in that market and kind of carry the momentum into the postseason. But right now they're going to be without Connor Ingram. He's in the player assistance program, and they have some big bodies back there on on up front, outside of Clayton Keller really. But they're an interesting team that I think they have more pieces than I think Calgary does, but that's just not a they don't really have, so to speak, the exciting part about their game.
Yeah, and the last thing about Calgary, I think while we applauded their addition of Morgan Frost and Joel Farabee, they've just been so-so coming on board, at least they're in the right age group. What Calgary needs to get is more dynamic players in the coming up through that are going to have like the Thomas Kyrou impact on that team. So that remains to be seen whether Calgary can get that sort of push going with prospects. But nonetheless, Craig Conroy's done a great job. We know Bill Armstrong, both of those guys have Blues ties. So they're not going away. So this will be fun down the stretch. Now, as far as the Blues go, the big hit was the loss of Colton Parayko. That's the bad news. The good news is they still had five proven D-men back on the blue line. And if you're looking for a lining that's got at least a little bit of shine to it, it's that they're going to have to play one of their younger D-men too. Where had there not been the injury, it would probably just ride out to six veterans.
Yeah, and it is a huge blow, right? I think when you look at the season that Colton Parayko is having, you can think about him in the same tier as, like Jakob Slavin in terms of defensive defensemen that can provide a decent all-around game. Not quite that upper echelon of defensemen, like a Hughes, Makar, whatever, your Werenski, those types of guys. But the season that he was having, career high 15 goals, tied career high 35 points, playing tough minutes, playing a lot of PK minutes, doing a lot, helping in transition, just doing a lot of things for the Blues. That's a big blow. And I don't think we've seen the effects of it quite yet. But I will say these past two games against Anaheim and Los Angeles, probably two of the worst ones that the Blues have had since coming back from the break. And that one in Los Angeles is still gutty. They're out there laying out blocking shots and everything, but you wonder how they can deal with these next 17 games without their best defenseman back there. And there is, I guess, the possibility that he does come back for the last few games of the season. The Blues, historically, when they announce a reevaluation timeline, those guys tend to come back earlier than that. And they've announced a 6 weeks timeline for Parayko. And I think back to Robert Thomas when he was given his timeline for his fractured ankle back in October, November. He came back a little earlier. Philip Broberg was back a little earlier from his injury. So I think the under promise over deliver aspect of the Blues injury report has always kind of been there. So I wonder if there is still some hope to get Parayko back for the end of the regular season in case the Blues are still making that push. But yeah, it's a huge blow for them. And as you mentioned, the good thing is when you look at Fowler, Falk, Leddy, Suter, Broberg, they have a ton of guys who have either played a lot of hockey in their entire career or a lot of big hockey this year in the case of Broberg. So they have a lot going, a lot of guys that can step in and play. Obviously, the two relatively inexperienced guys are Tucker and Kessel, where Tucker has been good in that long stint he had in the lineup. Kessel was decent in that first stint he had in the lineup earlier. And I think it'll be a matter of kind of getting both of them in, getting their handedness correct on whatever pairings that you want to line up and going from there. But yeah, the 5D that they do have there, they'll have to carry a lot of load. And that includes Philip Broberg and Justin Falk, who are basically the de facto number one pair at this point in usage and time on ice and all that stuff.
Yeah, and just to look forward a bit to next year, the fact that Broberg has to take more responsibility now again, as he did earlier this year, but now that he has to again, given the circumstances of the team, and the fact that Tucker will get a lot of ice time and Kessel will get some for sure. These are guys going to be important next year and going forward. Now, maybe Tucker and Kessel are just depth defensemen, but you still need to have depth defensemen, and you still having them in that age category. Is important. And the team's made a commitment to Tucker. Like, okay, you're going to be a part of it, the nucleus, maybe over all the way on the edge as a D-man, as a depth D-man, but you're part of the team now.
Yeah, and for him in particular, he's cheap. Matt Kessel is cheap. They just signed Tucker to that deal where he's at 925 a season for the next 2 seasons. Kessel signed for next season at 800, and when he's an RFA, he'll probably sign something similar to what Tucker did. They were on matching deals this time, 2 years at 800, and I imagine they'll be using Tucker as a comp for Kessel whenever his deal is done. So they're cheap. They're young. They can provide some minutes. And honestly, who knows what this defense looks like next year, right? Is Krug able to return from his injury? For Leddy and Falk, their full no trades dropped to 16 team no trades for Leddy and 15 team no trade for Falk. So you have pieces that you might be able to kind of move around. And that's something that, Doug Armstrong kind of hinted at during his trade deadline meeting with reporters. I think, a lot of the question was based around the situation with Braden Schenn. And there was how much do the possibilities open up in the summer when you have some of these no trade clauses becoming partial no trades? And that's the deal with Schenn. That's the deal with Falk, Krug, Leddy. And you want, and he his answer was, yeah, it does. It opens up a lot when the player doesn't have all that control. So you take that and you wonder what Doug Armstrong might be thinking in the summer, whether it was just revisiting a possible Schenn deal at that point, or whether it's looking at changing up the defense with Falk, Leddy, and Krug's no trades dropping down to partial no trades. So when you have the young guys signed and you have Parayko coming back, and Fowler coming back, Brobert will be back. Like you wonder what the detour is actually going to look like overall.
Well, it certainly helps that Nick Leddy, who misses most of the year with his injury, comes back and seems to be moving around like Nick Leddy again. Now, again, we've always graded Nick on the curve that he's exceeded expectations as a defensive defenseman because he was thrust in that role here where he hadn't been before. But looks pretty good moving around. I mean, again, he's Nick Leddy. We're not trying to oversell here, but considering that how much time he missed, and you wonder about how much mobility is an issue with the injury that he had, it looks fine. And had to throw himself in front of some shots there on the West Coast to get the team through.
Yeah, that third period was a really good one for him. I think there were moments in Anaheim and Los Angeles where you're kind of okay, all right, Nick Leddy needs to lock it in a little bit here. But in that third period in LA, he's blocking shots, he's breaking up 2-on-1s, steps off the bench, rips a one-timer for the team's only goal. Those were good signs from him, and the fact that it now, don't look now, but 2-game point streak for Nick Leddy. His first point of the season was in Anaheim on that assist, and his second point of the season came one night later when he scored his first goal. So yeah, I think if he can give you something, I think you're okay, especially now that you're expecting to see him on a pairing with Cam Fowler. Congratulations to the Fowlers. Had a second child over the weekend. So when Fowler's back and Letty's in the lineup with him, I think you can expect to see a lot more minutes for them together versus when Letty was being paired with Tyler Tucker on a pairing like that.
Yeah, and I think we go back and we look at that Fowler addition, which has been still astounding from the standpoint that it was the Blues and not a team with more serious cup chasing potential that made that move. I mean, again, don't want to oversell him, but he comes in, he's played pretty good. He's a pretty high skilled guy, and at a with the contract consumption from the Anaheim side, still can't believe they made that deal. And now that he is here. And your Preko's out, and again, he now Fowler's importance rises. Boy, if they don't have him, and of course, if they don't get Leddy back, this is a real crisis. Now, it's still bad without Colton Preko, given how well he's playing, but this just points to how invaluable that Fowler move was.
Yeah, and he kind of stepped in from the start and was productive for them. I mean, I just looked it up right now. Since the Blues acquired him on December 14, Fowler has 21 points in 34 games. That is tied for 21st in the league among defensemen in scoring. So you're looking at him and you're saying, all right, well, he's in the top 32 across the league of defensemen scoring since that time. Pareto is at 27th there, by the way, or 20 tied for 26th at 19 points. So you have a top pairing like that going out there producing playing shutdown minutes. He's been a good complement to Pareto. I think they've been looking for that in a few years since they haven't had Bouwmeester. When they try Scandella, they try Leddy, they try different pieces with Colton Pareto, and Fowler seemed to work with the way that he's able to skate, the way he sees offensively, and kind of just balances out the pairing a little bit. So he's been a really good addition for them. I think obviously the retention helps, not having another defenseman at 6.5, but instead having him at 4. And then also the fact that you did give up a second round pick, but it was I think it was further in the future, and then also you get a fourth in return. So, and you lose Beat Matuka, who, if we're being honest, was never going to play for you anyways. So, decent deal where you get a guy who can help you right now and help you in this push.
And you look at what he adds, to the power play, which is giving him a second option, another option on the point. That's proven valuable. So yeah, I mean, and again, for next year, you really want whatever happens this year, you really want to be in the chase next year, right? I mean, it's a tick-tock as the years start going by, and you haven't been relevant. So I think there's going to be a lot of focus on this upcoming season, and having him at a in that position as Doug looks for other things in the summer, and he's definitely going to have to subtract from the blue line to make some start making some numbers work. That is going to be a real plus. As we look, one more item on the blue line, we've talked about him a bit this year. Justin Falk just hasn't been the same guy at his peak form that he has been in the past, and certainly injuries have taken a toll on him and advancing age as well. Where do you see Falk right now? I mean, there's glimpses of him being Justin Falk and stretches of him being Falk. But again, now with Parayko out, it's not so much a luxury but a necessity that he pick up his game.
Yeah, there was that first few games after the break where you saw him creating a lot of chances, getting into scoring positions, setting up his teammates. You saw a lot of it going on for him during that time, and it hasn't seemed to be as prevalent or as consistent recently. But I think you can look at what him and Broberg have done recently, and they've been asked to play a shutdown role for that one game in LA, and I guess in Anaheim without Parayko, they kind of took on bigger responsibility, and they didn't look out of place. I think the way that Broberg can move around, the way that Falk can at times help get out of the zone, they've been good. And the fact that you're starting to see Falk be better is encouraging, but it's just one of those things where you, on a nightly basis, the Blues are going to be asking for all six of their defensemen to pick up whatever pieces have been left behind by Colton Parayko. So it's not just going to be a one or two game thing. It's going to be, for 17 more games, they're going to be asking a lot from all of their defensemen back there.
And can we argue now definitively that Colton Parayko does not have one of the very worst contracts in the National Hockey League? Year after year after year, the Athletic claims that he has one of the worst contracts in the NHL. I thought he looked okay in the Four Nations. Obviously, he's had a great year this year. Salary caps are soaring. He hasn't played that many NHL games relative to his age. And so just want to put that out there. I was going to beat that drum a little more loudly, except that he got hurt, so we can't really. We'll have to put that off for later. But pretty good for his dollar amount. And looking forward, looking at him physically, looking at how many games he's played, looking at the fact that Ryan Suter's like 58 years old with 4,000 NHL games. He looks fine. They don't all go south when they get old. And Parayko doesn't look. There's nothing about Parayko's physique that suggests he's going to fall apart anytime soon.
No, he's in great shape. I do like I, 6.5 for him, and just watching him every night, you understand the what he means to the Blues and what he does on a nightly basis. But I think so. I talked about this, I think, when I was on the radio about Parayko and his potential like chance to get Norris down ballot votes, right? Does he get 4 and 5 votes? Fourth and fifth place votes. And I think the answer is like, yeah, he's going to be in that other group. He's not going to be a finalist for the Norris, right? But he will be able to get so those votes later on. And I think the reason why he wasn't going to be looked at as a finalist, A, overall point production, and B, on ice effects. And when you look at the analytics, some of them say that the Blues are a better team in limiting shot attempts, at limiting expected goals, scoring chances, high danger chances when he's off the ice than when he is on the ice. And look, I understand a lot of that is he plays the toughest matchups, he plays the toughest zone starts, he has a lot of penalty kill minutes, he plays a ton of minutes just to begin with. But I think when the analytics come into play in terms of assessing his value, forecasting his contract value, and all that stuff, I think that's where that comes from. But I think seeing him on a daily basis, you understand the importance he has to the team, and the fact that 31 other GMs would probably take this deal doesn't mean that it's a bad one.
Yeah, and again, the analytics piece. I mean, he's seeing Scheifele, not Nemestikov. He's seeing Nathan MacKinnon, not Casey Mittelstadt. If he were playing, he'd be playing against Sidney Crosby, against the Penguins. I mean, and most NHL teams have got a dynamic line and maybe an okay second line, and the other two lines are trying to get on and off the ice so that the number one and number two lines can play. And so, yeah, of course the numbers don't look good. But anyways, that's where you've got to actually watch the game sometimes, I think. And anyways, that's my soapbox. One last thing on the net front with Matthew DeFranks, and this is really, you're really setting people back with this reporting, Matthew, because the social media warriors love nothing more than to just relentlessly attack Jordan Kyrou. Because you know it's been a process. It's been a process, as they would say up north, to get him to the level where he's getting this year. What's this? Jordan Kyrou staying late after practice? What?
Yeah, it's been a pretty regular occurrence, him and Dylan Holloway staying late on the ice. And sometimes it's just the two of them, sometimes the two of them, and Stills coach Michael Babcock. The 2 days ago, Kyrou was off early, and it was Holloway, Kessel, Joel Hofer, and then Babcock. So it's not always, but often. And that's something that, I talked to Kyrou and Holloway about it. Holloway, his motor seems to not stop whenever they're in the building. On off days, he said he'll come in, he'll be in the shooting room for an hour, he'll shoot pucks for an hour off ice. You go in the sauna, go in the ice bath, and then leave after that. And then during practice days, he's out there for a solid 45 to an hour after practice ends, working on things. And that's kind of pulled Kyrou into it as well. They've talked about doing it since training camp, and they work on different things, whether it's different skating, their edge work when they're skating, shooting, hands in tight, all the different things that they feel like they're missing in their game at that current point. They're able to pinpoint, work on a little bit, and both of them actually mentioned it helps them feel more confident. They feel better about their game having done that work. So, yeah, I guess sometimes it's not even about improving the skill. It's about improving your mind and the belief that you can be doing those things because you just did them for an hour after practice a day ago. So, yeah, it's a lot of repetition, a lot of hard work after practice that we've seen this season, and good for them. They're putting in some work, and I think in particular, Holloway and Kyrou have seen positive results. I mean, Holloway obviously has had the best season of his career, far outpacing any expectations I think that people put on him this year. And then Kyrou has improved dramatically overall, I think, and on pace to have another 30 goal season. So the fact that he could have another offensive season that, maybe points wise wasn't up to some of his previous years, but overall you see a lot fewer, gaffes defensively. They're still there. No player is perfect, and no player that has his base skills is going to be that perfect. But the fact that you see it a lot less, and you see him working harder to get back, and even in the neutral zone tracking pucks, getting them back and turning them the other way. So good for them.
Now, I actually saw him smiling when he was talking to you in the dressing room. I mean, and this I joke, but this is a guy that was not the happiest guy in the world because he puts does people you have to understand he does put a fair amount of pressure on himself, and he has a hard time maybe translating that to success on the ice, and his body language isn't always the best. Now his body language seems pretty good, and in that promotional commercial that the NHL has, he cracked a little smile there too on the exercise bike.
Yeah,
Progress.
it was a couple. Was yeah, like 2 seconds of a rare time there,
Yeah.
but they were a good 2 seconds, huh? Yeah, I think he just doesn't like cameras. I think I've noticed whenever there's cameras around, the answers become a lot shorter. The demeanor changes more, and whether and when you're just sitting next to him with it's a print recorder and a print reporter with a recorder, and not a TV station with a camera. It's a lot easier.
Well, there you go. See, things are so much better. We were so downcast for much of the year here in the net front, and now our heroes are on the edge of the playoff race. They're right there, the race. They're right there. They're on a bit of an uptick. They've got a big injury to overcome, but they've got some depth. This should be fun the rest of the way. So, Matthew, we'll remind folks that we'll be here every week in the net front, and that you're checking out this video. You probably know, and or our podcast as well, that you know that the. A lot of stuff on STLtoday.com, our digital edition. So we do appreciate all of our subscribers for supporting us and supporting local journalism. Until next time, for Matthew DeFranks, I'm Jeff Gordon. See ya.